Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I'm now going to cover Psalms chapter 81. I will give it a title, Oh, That My People Would Listen to Me. The heading of this psalm says, For the Director of Music, According to Gittith of Asaph. Now, Gittith, what in the world does that mean? It's just transliterated from the Hebrew. The NIV note says it's probably a musical term. Nobody knows exactly what it is. The psalm is said to be attributed to Asaph of Asaph. And as I've said many, many times before, there are 12 psalms in the whole corpus of psalms that belong to Asaph, Psalm 50 and Psalm 73 through 83. He was originally appointed, the original Asaph was appointed by David as chief worship leader in 1 Chronicles 16, verses 4 through 6. David appointed some of the Levites as ministers before the ark of the Lord, even to celebrate and to thank and praise the Lord God of Israel, Asaph the chief. So he was the chief of the worship leaders, and further on down in 1 Chronicles 16, verse 5, it says Asaph played loud-sounding cymbals. So he was the cymbal banger and the chief worship leader. His descendants carried on the job all the way down to the post-exilic times of Ezra 3:10, where we read in Ezra 3:10, Now when the builders had laid the foundation of the temple of the Lord, this is the new temple, the rebuilt temple, 520 to 516, the original Asaph was appointed during David's reign, and David ruled from 1010 to 970 B.C., so we're talking about a good while later. Now when the builders had laid the foundation of the temple of the Lord, the priests stood in their apparel with trumpets, and the Levites, the sons of Asaph, with cymbals to praise the Lord, according to the directions of King David. So the directions of King David had been given 300-400 years before, and they were still at it, still worshiping the Lord in the tabernacle and still banging the cymbals. Now, these latter members of the family of Asaph, they could be biological descendants. They could merely be professional descendants, as in a guild. People would be invited into the Asaph guild so that they could do their worship music together. We can't be sure one way or the other whether the later sons of Asaph were biological or professional. Now, in some of these psalms, it's obvious that the destruction of Israel by Babylon, as it was so referred in Psalm 80. And so there we have to take Asaph as being a later Asaph. But here we don't know exactly where in this psalm that the psalmist is taking us. Chronologically, we don't know. So we'll just assume that it's David's original Asaph. I'll call him Asaph just to make it simpler. So we start now in Psalms 81, verses 1 through 2. Asaph says, Sing for joy to God our strength, shout joyfully to the God of Jacob, raise a song, strike the timbrel, the sweet-sounding lyre with the harp. Now, obviously, from these two verses, we can tell that Psalms 81 is a festal psalm, a psalm to be sung at a feast with joy and thanksgiving. Jameson Fawcett Brown says it's probably for the Passover feast, although that can be disputed and is disputed. We'll talk about that in a little bit later. Now, these instructions are probably being given by Asaph to the priest of the Levites to help out with the music and song, and so that's who's being addressed. Sing, you Levites and priests, for joy to God our strength. Shout joyfully to the God of Jacob. Raise a song, strike the timbrel. The NIV has tambourine because that's what a timbrel is. It's a tambourine. The sweet-sounding lyre with the harp. A lyre is a stringed instrument of some sort. Sometimes people say it's similar to a guitar. And sometimes lyre and harp are confused, translated differently in the Hebrew. So we'll just go with lyre and harp. We go now to Psalms 81, verses 3 through 5. Asaph continues, Blow the trumpet at the new moon, at the full moon, on our feast today, for it is a statute for Israel, an ordinance for the God of Jacob. He established it for a testimony in Joseph when he went through the land of Egypt, when he went throughout the land of Egypt. I heard a language that I did not know. Now, this is going to take some explanation here. First of all, in verse 3, we see a command still being addressed to the Levites, as Colin Delitzsch say, blow the trumpet at the new moon. The NIV capitalizes new moon. The NASB does not. The reason the NIV capitalizes it, according to the NIV Study Bible, is this is a description of the new moon festival. Remember, Israel had a trumpet blowing festival at the beginning of each month. And here's a generic description of this monthly festival from the NIV Study Bible. The new moon was both a religious and a civil festival. It was celebrated at the beginning of each month. It's often mentioned in the Old Testament along with the Sabbath day. It was a day of celebration, Hosea 2:11, a day of rest. We see that in Amos 8:5. It was a day of increased offerings in Numbers 28 and Ezekiel 45. It was a day of worship. We see that in Isaiah 66 and Ezekiel 46. Now, this new moon is mentioned in verse 3 of Psalm 81 could be referring to every monthly new moon, 12 of them, celebrated at the first of every month. John Gill suggests that. But it also could refer to a special new moon, the one that was sounded on Tishri 1. Tishri, of course, is the seventh month of the religious year, the first month of the civil year. We read about this first of Tishri, which is in modern terminology called Rosh Hashanah, the head of the year, famous Jewish holiday celebrated even today. Leviticus 23:24, tell the Israelites, in the seventh month, on the first day of the month, that's Tishri 1, you're to have a day of complete rest, commemoration, and joyful shouting, a sacred assembly. Tishri, by the way, is the famous month, seventh month of the religious year, in which you have Rosh Hashanah, Feast of Trumpets, on the first day of the month. The 10th day of the month, you have the famous Day of Atonement, and the 15th, starting on the 15th day, you have the famous Feast of Tabernacles. Well, all that's easy enough, but then we have something that's puzzling. Blow the trumpet at the new moon, at the full moon? Well, if the new moon and the full moon are at the same time, that's impossible, because the new moon is when you don't see any moon in the sky, and the full moon is when you see the whole 360-degree moon in the sky. The new moon is at the first of the month. It's dark, you see nothing, and then about mid-month, about the 15th of the month or so, you see the full moon. So how do we solve the problem? Well, here is two ways to solve it. First of all, you can say full moon is not even in the text, so we have a translation issue here. Here's some other translations that don't put full moon in the text. Psalms 81 verse 3 in the Darby translation says, blow the trumpet at the new moon at the set time, not at the full moon, but at the set time on our feast day. Well, that's a simple answer, because then the feast day would be at the new moon, the first of the month, on the Feast of Trumpets, Tishri 1, or maybe on all the other new moon festivals at the beginning of each of the other months. Now, Darby does have a marginal note that says, quote, others, meaning other translators, at the full moon, as Proverbs 7:20. It more probably refers to special appointment or reckoning, according to the word in the original. We see KJV agreeing with Darby, Psalms 81:3, blow up the trumpet in the new moon. Blow up the trumpet. That's great English, is it not? In the new moon, in the time appointed, not at the full moon, but in the time appointed. And then Young's literal translation has, blow in the month a trumpet in the new moon, no mention at all of full moon. So that completely solves it if you take that translation, but most of the translators don't do that. They say at the full moon. Well, if you do that, you've got a problem you have to solve a different way. You would have to say blow the trumpet at the new moon is on one day and at the full moon is at a different day. Now, Barnes says the translation must be full moon, not like the KJV. The Barnes commentator says this, the word means not as in our translation referring to the KJV, in the time appointed, but at the full moon, and would refer to the time of Passover, which was celebrated on the 14th day of the lunar month, that is, when the moon was at the full. So, if you take that translation, then you have to say blow the trumpet at the feast of the new moon at the first of the month, any month, or maybe Tishri 1, doesn't really matter, but you blow the trumpet at the first of the month and then at the full moon in the middle of the month, Nisan 14, on our feast day, which would be Passover. Okay, well, that's another way it could be solved. Now, you could say blow the trumpet at the new moon, at the full moon, and on our feast day, which is on another day, on another feast, and just split the three time periods into three different days, but probably feast days refers to the full moon when the trumpet is blown. Now, there are two feast days upon which the trumpet is blown at the full moon. The first is Passover, Nisan 14, right in the middle of the month when the moon is full, or the Feast of Tabernacles, which is Tishri 15, where the moon is also full. And some commentators take one and some take the other. So let's go to the third mention of a time in verse 3, the new moon, number 1, the full moon, number 2, on our feast day. And as I said, people debate what the feast day is. Let's look at that a little bit clearer. Three options. It could be the new moon festival just mentioned. Now, if we take that, then we have to take the KJV translation that that leaves out full moon in the text, and so it would be at the appointed time, at the set time. Blow the trumpet at the new moon at the set time, our feast day, which is the Feast of Trumpets. Okay, that's option number one. Now, if it's referring to the new moon festival, that feast day is described in Numbers 10:10. Also, in the day of your gladness and in your appointed feast, and on the first days of your months, you shall blow the trumpets over your burnt offerings and over the sacrifices of your peace offerings, and they shall be a reminder of you before your God. I am the Lord your God. Now, Numbers 10:10 talks about blowing trumpets at a lot of different times, but in one time that we're interested in, on the first days of your months, that would be the new moon festivals. The monthly new moon festivals at the beginning of each month. Now, there were trumpets blown on those new moon festivals, but those festivals were not called the Feast of Trumpets. There was a special new moon festival on Tishri 1 that was called the Feast of Trumpets. That's described in Leviticus 23, verse 24. Speak to the sons of Israel, saying, in the seventh month, that's Tishri, seventh year of the religious calendar, in the seventh month, on the first day of the month, you shall have a rest, a reminder by blowing of trumpets, a holy convocation. So it's easy to get these festivals mixed up, New Moon and Feast of Trumpets, because both of them happened on the first of the month, and all of them had trumpets. But the Feast of Trumpets is basically the way I look at it, a special New Moon feast on the first of Tishri. Okay, again, this feast day in verse 3, blow the trumpet on your feast day in Psalm 81, verse 3, could be the Feast of Trumpets, or it could just be a new moon, an ordinary new moon festival. But if you say that, you have to get rid of that full moon, because there is no full moon on the first of the month. So you take the translation that has no full moon in it. Now, if you do take full moon, then, as I said earlier, the feast day that could be referred to is either the Passover or, as another alternative, the Feast of Tabernacles. The pulpit commentator says there are some, however, as Hingstenberg, Professor Shane, and Professor Alexander, who consider it to be a Passover psalm. Our commentator Barnes, Alfred Barnes, he says it's the Passover. The pulpit commentator says that it's the Feast of Tabernacles. They say that trumpets were probably blown then, we don't know for sure, but he just speculates that they are. And Matthew Poole says they kept the Feast of Tabernacles, which the Hebrew doctors call the feast, by way of imminency. In other words, when Psalms 85:3 says, blow the trumpet on our feast day is taken to be sort of like a proper noun, or sort of like a special day. It's like when Willie Mays made the catch. This is the feast day. So at any rate, the trumpet's going to be blown on the festivals. To summarize verse 3, verse 4, for it is a statute for Israel, an ordinance of the God of Jacob. I just read you the statute. If it's the Feast of Trumpets in Leviticus 23:24, and Numbers 10:10, if it's the New Moon Festival. I didn't read the law concerning the establishment of the Passover or Tabernacle, but whatever it was written down in the law. And Asaph mentions this to show how important it is. It's a statute and ordinances. That's just two different ways of saying the same thing. It's in the law. Verse 5, He, that's God, established it for a testimony in Joseph. Joseph, of course, is the name of one of the sons of Jacob that is used often to stand for Israel, probably because he had two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, who had tribes, and so therefore he was important. God established all this blowing of trumpets on the feast days in Israel when Joseph, which stands for Israel, when Israel went throughout the land of Egypt, the NASB has. Well, that doesn't make much sense to me, when he went throughout the land of Egypt. Well, I guess you could say when Israel was living in Egypt is when this was established. But the problem with that is it wasn't established until Israel went out of Egypt and made it to Mount Sinai on the Exodus. So that's a problem. Alfred Barnes says that the translation should be going out of the land of Egypt, referring to Israel leaving Egypt on the Exodus. If that's so, then verse 5 would read this way. He, God, established it for testimony in Joseph and Israel when Israel went out the land of Egypt, or out from the land of Egypt. Now, I have some commentators who agree with Barnes on that. The Holman Christian Study Bible note says, the Septuagint, the Syriac version, read out of. They also have the J.E.R. says out of, too, and I don't know what J.E.R. means. I'd have to get the Home of Christian Study Bible and look in their preface, and I'm too lazy. But the point is there are other translates that translate it as out. Here's the New American Bible, Psalms 81:5. Who, God, made it a decree for Joseph when he, Joseph, came out of the land of Egypt. And so there's your answer as to what throughout means. Now, why? I don't know the Hebrew, of course, but the NASB, the Home of Christian Study Bible, a lot of other translations say throughout the land of Egypt. I've always considered prepositions kind of tricky in translation. Now, here's another completely different translation. Psalms 81:5 in the God's Word translation says this. These are the instructions God set in place for Joseph when Joseph rose to power over Egypt. So there Joseph is not standing for Israel, the nation, but Joseph, the individual person, and he didn't go throughout Jesus. He rose to power over Egypt. Well, that is a stretch, I think. But now we have another problem. At the end of verse 5, we read this. I heard a language that I did not know. So it goes from the third person, Joseph, he goes throughout the land of Egypt, then I heard a language that I did not know. Now, Adam Clark says it should be translated, he, i.e. Joseph, heard a language he did not know. That would refer to the Israelites in Egypt not understanding Egyptian, and that would make sense. But the problem is, I can't find any other authority for translating it that way. I looked in the American Standard Version, Bible in Basic English, Darby, God's Word Translation, Home of Christian Study Bible, King James, the New American Bible, the New American Standard Bible, and the Young's Literal Translation, and all of them have I. So we're going to take verse 5 as saying, I heard a language that I did not know. Well, how do we explain that? Who's the I? Well, the I is Asaph, who sees himself as a part of the people of Israel in Egypt. So he identifies so much with the people of Israel that he says, I was there. He was there in spirit, even though he wasn't there in body. Kind of like Paul was with the Corinthian church when he says, I'm with you in spirit. Kick this guy sleeping with his stepmother, kick him out of the church. So we'll take it that way. Asaph heard a language that he did not know. What's the point of mentioning the fact that they heard Egyptian and didn't understand it? Well, when you're in a foreign land and all you hear is a foreign language, this is an aggravation of one's distress. You can't understand the language of your oppressors. I was in China for many years, and I guarantee you there was a lot of stuff I never understood. It just makes things more difficult. We go now to Psalms 81, verses 6 through 7. I, now here we have a quotation mark in the NASB, also in the Home of Christian Study Bible, showing that this is the beginning of a quotation. It's a different I than was in verse 5. This I refers to God. I relieved his shoulder, Jacob's shoulder, Joseph's shoulder, Israel's shoulder. I relieved his shoulder of the burden. His hands were freed from the basket. You called in trouble, and I rescued you. I answered you in the hiding place of thunder. I proved you at the waters of Meribah, Selah. So now we're talking about the Egyptian slavery and the Exodus. God is said to free the Israelites' hands from the basket, which means they don't have to carry a basket anymore. And, of course, if you used the parallelism here in the first part of verse 6, I relieved his shoulder of the burden, so we can picture a basket on the shoulder of the Israelite slave. That symbolized the weight Israel carried around while enslaved in Egypt. According to the NIV Study Bible, there are no baskets actually mentioned in the Exodus account, but you can imagine they had to use baskets. They had to carry things, for example, supplies, such as bricks and mortar while they built buildings. They had to carry grain from the fields. They were slaves. They had to have a basket. God says, no more basket because I took you out of Egypt on the Exodus. And then God continues in verse 7, you called in trouble and I rescued you. I answered you in the hiding place of thunder. That's the NASB translation. It's not a very good one. The NIV says, I answered you out of a thundercloud. The Home of Christian Study Bible says, I answered you from the thundercloud, not the hiding place of thunder. A thundercloud. Well, what thundercloud? Well, John Gill suggests that there was God answering the Israelites. There he was in the plague of thunder and lightning which God had brought upon the Egyptians. And God answered the Israelites in the midst of all that by taking them out on the Exodus. So option one. Option two, suggested by Gill, God looked out of the pillar of cloud at the Red Sea and troubled the Egyptians. The problem with that is the Shekinah glory, the pillar of cloud, that's not really ever called a thundercloud. A hiding place of thunder. I guess you could say God's voice was in that cloud as he spoke. That's an option. Plausible maybe, but I don't think it's very likely. I think the best solution is from Adam Clark. God answered the Israelites in the thunder that was associated with the giving of the law at Mount Sinai. As you know, at Mount Sinai, there was lots of heavy, gloomy clouds, lightning, thunder, and so forth, earthquakes. That's probably what, in my opinion, Asaph is talking about here. And then God is continuing to speak as Asaph puts words in his mouth. I proved you, I, God, proved you at the waters of Meribah. Now, when the psalmist says waters of Meribah, he could be referring to one of two places, or maybe both of those places, because there were two waters of Meribah in the Old Testament. The first one was at Rephidim, right before the Israelites got to Mount Horeb, Mount Sinai. Let me read that for you, Exodus 17, 1 through 7. Then all the congregation of the sons of Israel journeyed by stages from the wilderness of Sin, according to the command of the Lord, and camped at Rephidim. That's R-E-P-H-I-D-I-M. And there was no water for the people to drink. Therefore the people quarreled with Moses and said, and Meribah means quarrel, by the way, therefore the people quarreled with Moses and said, give us water that we may drink. And Moses said to them, why do you quarrel with me? Why do you test the Lord? But the people thirsted there for water, and they grumbled against Moses and said, why now have you brought us up from Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst? So Moses cried out to the Lord, saying, what shall I do to this people? A little more, and they will stone me. Then the Lord said to Moses, pass before the people and take with you some of the elders of Israel, and take in your hand your staff with which you struck the Nile, and go. Behold, I will stand before you there on the rock at Horeb. Again, I said Rephidim is close to Horeb. And you shall strike the rock, and water will come out of it, that the people may drink. And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. He named the place Massah and Meribah, because of the quarrel of the sons of Israel, and because they tested the Lord, saying, is the Lord among us or not? Now, quarrel is what Meribah means, and tested is what Massah means. That's why it says, because they quarreled and tested. Quarreled with Moses and tested the Lord. Quarrel is Meribah, tested is Massah. That's at Rephidim. That's the first place, but Meribah is also mentioned. Meribah quarreling is also mentioned at Kadesh, near the end of the Exodus, Numbers 20, verses 1 through 3. The entire Israelite community entered the wilderness of Sin in the first month, and they settled in Kadesh. Miriam died and was buried there. There was no water for the community, so they assembled against Moses and Aaron. The people quarreled with Moses. There's Meribah. And said, if only we had perished when our brothers perish before the Lord. Dropping down to verse 13 in Numbers 20, these are the waters of Meribah, where the Israelites quarreled with the Lord, and he showed his holiness to them. And so this was two well-known instances in the history of Israel, and Asaph appeals to that in Psalms 81, verse 7. He says, I proved you, I tested you, in other words, at the waters of Meribah. And of course, prove or tested, the idea is, I'm trying to show that you're going to make it, that you're not going to be destroyed. I prove that you're my people. We go down to Psalms 81, verses 8 through 16, and we'll finish up this audio. God has continued to speak. His words are put in the psalm by Asaph. Hear, O my people, and I will admonish you. O Israel, if you would listen to me. How many times have you said that to people that you care about, your friends, your children, your relatives? If you would just listen to God, things would be a lot better, but people don't listen because the human race has got to be the most refractory, the most stubborn, the most stiff-necked species of organisms on the planet. Much more than mules. Much more than donkeys. Oh, my people, if you would listen to me, let there be no strange god among you, nor shall you worship any foreign god. Well, of course, the Israelites were famous for doing that, were they not? Verse 10, I, the Lord, am your God who brought you up from the land of Egypt. Open your mouth wide, and I will fill it. As John Gill says, why would they be opening their mouths? Could be to pray to God, could be to praise God, but Adam Clark has what I think is the best option. They were to open their mouths in expectation of spiritual food, like little birds. Open your mouth. The mama bird says to the little birds, open your mouth, open it wide, and I'll put some worms in it. Likewise, Israelites, if you'll just open your mouth wide with confident expectation that I'm going to feed you, I will feed you. Of course, the application points of that are obvious. Verse 11, but my people did not listen to my voice, and Israel did not obey me. So I gave them over to the stubbornness of their heart to walk in their own devices. Now notice that sin has its own punishment built in. You sin, You walk away from God, and then the wages of sin start to be paid to you. Those wages start out with sickness of some sort. I mean, not just physical, but life circumstances. And then finally, you end up dying and going to hell, separated from God forever. Well, God says, okay, you want to leave me? I'm not going to force you to be my slave. You're not robots. Go ahead. Go over. Be stubborn in your heart. Walk in your own devices. See how that works for you. Verse 13, oh, that my people would listen to me, that Israel would walk in my ways. And of course, they didn't. Verse 14, I would quickly subdue their enemies and turn my hand against their adversaries. You know, if you want prosperity in this world, try obedience. You know, the prosperity message, they speak about prosperity a lot. How much do they talk about obedience? I don't know. I don't listen to those people anymore, but I was around it for a long time when I was in the charismatic movement, and I didn't hear too much about obedience. I heard a lot about faith, but where's the obedience? That's how you get prosperous, obeying God. And of course, sometimes it's difficult to obey God because he asks you to do difficult things and because you are a stubborn, sinful human being who has been born into sin with your soul bent toward evil and not toward good. And it takes time to learn to be submitted to the yoke of Christ. But if you would do that, the faster you submit, the happier you're going to be. Verse 15, God continues speaking. Those who hate the Lord would pretend obedience to him, and their time of punishment would be forever. In other words, even those who aren't going to submit in their hearts to God, they're going to have to submit in hypocrisy. They would have to pretend obedience because they'd be scared of what God's going to do to them. And their time of punishment would be forever. That Hebrew word there is olam, which can either mean forever or for a long, long, long time, which would mean basically the time of the evil peoples, the hypocritical, submissive enemies of God. Their time of punishment would be for the rest of their lives, or it could be eternal punishment forever, world without end, off into eternity. I'll let you decide that one. I don't know if we could really tell here. In verse 16, God says, but I would feed you with the finest of the wheat, and with honey from the rock I would satisfy you. And with honey from the rock I would satisfy you. Would, that's conditional, that's subjunctive, would. What's the condition? You got to open your mouth wide, Israel. I'll give you honey from the rock. What does that mean? Rock doesn't have honey in it. Well, it's referring to bees who put their hives up in the rocks, and the honey comes out of the beehive, and it looks like it's coming out of the rock. This is a phrase reminiscent of a song sung by Moses, Deuteronomy 32:13. He made him ride on the high places of the earth, that's God, and he ate the produce of the field, and he made him suck honey from the rock and oil from the flinty rock. The he there that is sucking honey from the rock is Israel, if we look at the context of Deuteronomy 32:13. So all the blessings were there, so you can't blame God when the nation is judged. Not God's fault. Application to us Christians today, if we go through hard times, it's not God's fault. Now, sometimes we go through hard times because God's testing us when we didn't do anything wrong, like Job, but a lot of times it's because we sin and we deprive ourselves of God's blessing and favor and help. We don't open our mouth wide so that God may fill it. So ladies and gentlemen, with those exhortatory words, we are now finished with Psalms 81. We're ready to go to Psalms 82 in our next audio, which I will entitle Rescue the Weak and Needy. I hope you stay tuned for that exposition, and I hope you enjoyed this one.